Well, today is Tuesday, September 5th, the day after Labor Day, a holiday here in the U.S.
This will likely be the last celebration of Labor Day, as by 2018, all the jobs will have gone to robots.
A memorial of Labor Day? We already have a Memorial Day. It's probably fine.
But what would we take off from for that day?
Job hunting? Our first follow-up, AMD GPU sales the Vega 56 came out and it sold out in 5 minutes, and so gamers are livid at crypto miners. But I think there's more going on here than most people realize. AMD and distributors or retailers are in competition for the margin of profit on that card. And so, you know, some retailers, some distributors have come out and said, oh, AMD is overcharging us for the card. And I don't think that's really the whole story.
It's really about, you know, who's going to make the money. There's the margin on these cards is like $100, something like that, you know, and who gets what share of it. And of course, everybody wants the most they can get from the card. And it's really not fair to vilify them for it. And also, they're going to sell it to the highest bidder. Again.
Yay, capitalism.
Now, a lot of the people who I hear complaining about this have sold older cards in preparation for Vega into the mining boom, and they didn't cut a better deal to the people on eBay they sold them to.
made a tiny profit.
It's because it was the right thing to do. They used it for 3 years and sold it for the same price they bought it for. So, yeah, these companies are going to do that too. It's not shocking.
A few people on our forum were able to get these cards for $399, $499, around there, you know, plus or minus a few bucks, well, plus a few bucks with shipping and all of the other stuff. But you know, most people don't realize that $399 is, there's sort of a gentleman's agreement between AMD, because the distributor or the retailer is making some profit there too. And so if the retailer can charge $600 or $700 for a Vega graphics card because mining or whatever else, then it is in their best interest to get the card for as little as possible from AMD. And so it puts AMD in a difficult spot, because like, well, you're going to charge more than MSRP. We want in on some of that action, maybe. I don't know. I don't know that that's what's happening, but that's a completely reasonable thing to happen in, you know, capitalism. So I don't know. At $399, Vega 56 is a really good deal. It uses more power than the competition, and the software is not as mature as the competition, but you've got a much better compute performance, things like Blender, Luxmark, those types of benchmarks. It's more exciting technology because it's newer. HBM2 is probably the future. But I really don't get why so many people are so upset, other than just, you know, maybe not enough cards to go around. But AMD also, they can't ramp up the production to deal with this either, because if the cryptocurrency market crashes, all those, you know, 290Xs that are on eBay for 400 US are going to suddenly be like $50 US. So, you know, you're sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't. So the sales of all those cards, that must mean that the cryptocurrency market is about to crash. I don't know, but it just sailed past $5,000 a Bitcoin.
Now, I did immediately pull back. That's probably not indicative of a downward trend, but just everybody was like, oh my God, 5,000, let me take some profit here. Because some of these people, you know, they bought it like 3,500. That's pretty nice profit. So I think 4,400 is the trend line. If it goes below that, yeah, maybe we'll see a little bit more of a waterfall, but it's probably just a temporary thing.
Even at these crazy, you know, GPU prices, I mean, we worked out the math, and it's taking like a year for one of these cards to pay for itself. If you pay, you know, the $600 or $700 for a Vega card, and it's, you know, absolute maximum mining hash rate of about 45 mega hashes per second, and then the conversion to Bitcoin, and then assuming, you know, the Bitcoin stays roughly the same value, we're still talking about like a 1 year payoff, aren't we? I mean, that's kind of nuts.
Yeah, but you got to think about the big, I mean, it's in China, right? China's doing most of this. We blame China for a lot of stuff, but hey.
What's China or Russia?
They've got these warehouses full of cards that are constantly running, and they're getting these Bitcoins for a really tidy profit. So they've got the money. You know, they've got deep pockets at this point. Why not keep building the infrastructure? It's worked so far. It might destroy them one day, but now when that happens, I want everybody to be out in the streets with torches and pitchforks saying, These people are charging too little for video cards. It's ruining the industry. We got to protect AMD. Nobody will do that.
Well, if they ramp up production, they can literally use the graphics card as torches.
Well, they do get pretty warm.
Oh, the maker of the infamous $400 juicer is shutting down. This is Juicero. We covered this before. It's an internet-connected juicing machine?
Well, now when you say juicing machine, it's an important note. You don't put fruit into it and get juice out. Now that's what, when I think of a juicer, right? Fruit and vegetables in, juice out. No, no, no. This is prepaid from the same company, juice bags in, and then juice into a glass out. But you could go ahead and just squeeze it by hand if you wanted to.
I'm not interested in anything of the vegetable slicer juicer genre unless it's sold to me by Ron Popeil.
Is he still alive?
I don't know. I only want the Juice-O-Matic Juice Tiger. China is going to review complaints from Apple developers. This is kind of a follow-up to something we reported on last week or the week before, where Apple was pulling a lot of apps that were developed by Chinese App Store developers. Well, they've gotten together and hired a lawyer, like 50 developers at last count, and they've hired the law firm Dare and Sure in China to file a lawsuit on their behalf. And the lawsuit is just like, we want more transparency. What, you know, what can we fix in order to get back in the App Store? What's going on? Because, you know, Apple is pretty tight-lipped about these things as Apple goes. So
that was a class action lawsuit. The new element here is that the Chinese regulators have come in and be like, oh, maybe we should take a look at this, which is probably very, very bad news for Apple.
It's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out because Apple typically wants to be on their best behavior with these governments because it is an emerging market and there are tons and tons of profits to be made there. So they really, you know, even though we in the West would say that some of this is perhaps a bit draconian or heavy-handed, you know, Apple is saying, you know, lines like, well, we've got to comply with local laws. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this shakes out.
And China, so Google went head-to-head with the Chinese government about the whole censorship thing, and it was like, we don't censor, and China was just like, you're out. So, you know, they've seen what will happen. If you want to do business with China, you must play by their rules, and they are not shy about getting rid of you.
Google's also struggling similarly in the EU because of privacy and shopping and all that kind of thing. So Google is going to comply with EU search demands to avoid more fines. Now, this is a row about Google's shopping platform, like recommended products, because it seems like Google is favoring things that use Google as opposed to just, you know, organic search results.
And the EU is not cool with any, they are very serious about keeping the playing field level in terms of commerce. You know, that's the big, EU's, it's basically a trade thing. Now, Intel ran afoul of the EU 8 years ago, and they also lost, but they were like, hey, let's appeal this. Well, the appeal is just now coming around.
Yeah.
So for eight, and when you, in the EU, it's not like, well, let's appeal this. We'll keep doing it until you figure it out. No, you have to stop doing it. So if Google takes the same path, then they're going to have to do whatever the EU says while the appeal's going on. So it's bad news all around for them.
Now, it's worth noting that that Intel fine stems from anti-competitive practices or alleged anti-competitive practices in the EU regarding to the sale of AMD processors. Intel was offering rebates, which were a non-trivial amount of money to people to only carry Intel processors or to advertise Intel processors within their products favorably, which may have been unfair to AMD and other, you know, processor manufacturers. So yeah, that $1 billion fine still not paid. It's probably bad. Well, there goes our Cannon Lake samples. Facebook wants in. They're going to regularly, I guess this is false news or fake news or whatever they call it. They're not wanting to let people pay to push that content on Facebook users, kind of like Google has been doing lately with the whole demonetization thing of YouTube, but sort of the other side of the coin of that.
Yeah, we covered the Facebook, the whole idea of they target these stories which are false news. That's their proprietary version of fake news. I don't know what the difference is. There isn't one. But they're going to take
it. Fake news is too politicized. We got to call it false news.
They're taking it a step further in terms of, if you do this a lot, if you try to purchase ads for false news, they're going to stop you from purchasing any ads. So they're going to silence you to keep you from being bad.
I have a feeling this is going to work out exactly like the YouTube platform demonetization stuff has been, which is literally everything gets demonetized for any reason. It's like, oh, we're going to show you how to change your terminals at the Linux command line this week. Nope, demonetized, because that's actually happening right now on YouTube.
Yeah, and anything that's the least bit controversial, which is literally everything right now, it's almost impossible. We actually go a long way to not take a political stance on this show. I mean, we bleed through sometimes just because we're human. But people will assign whatever role they don't like to us. Like, we'll get accused of being left and right about the same topic in the same video by some of the commenters. So there isn't much you can post, you know, maybe cat videos that
cat videos.
People aren't going to somehow, you know, they're going to project onto and be like, that's bad, get rid of it.
The tweaker stream.
You know, a local, well, what I would do if I was like a local politician, I would go hand out shirts for the opposing politician to the tweakers. How beautiful would that be?
How long until we get tweaker justice warriors? Uber, the Uber Expedia CEO has been named. It's Dara.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm not going to try it. Starts with a K and ends with an I. You can look it up yourself. You know, that's a microaggression.
Really?
Yeah. Not being able to pronounce somebody's name, being like, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. Like, I literally can't, but somehow that's racist if you can't do that.
I don't know. That's really weird. He kind of looks like he's about to, take his glasses off and come up with some quippy thing, like at the beginning of a CSI, an episode of CSI. This is just a crazy.
I mean, it's a great picture.
How did they get that? That's just,
well, that was a photo shoot, right? It's gotta be.
These are official press photos for the guy. Well, so I guess Uber's search for a female CEO really did not go well.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this was supposed to be the female CEO, but Uber has an internal civil war going on between this venture capital firm that bought a ton of it and the board of directors. And this was the guy that everybody could agree on. He's sort of like the safe version, I guess. They did have a female who was kind of in the running, but she wanted the ex-CEO, Kalanick.
Yeah.
The really controversial guy. She wanted him out completely. She was like, I'm not coming to play your game unless you get rid of him. And the board wouldn't do it.
Wow. That was the guy that was Steve Jobsing it, right?
And this, I think, really confirms that he is, in fact, Steve Jobsing it. Because they're getting this guy. It's like, he's just, don't worry. He's safe. He's going to keep your seat warm. When this dies down, you'll be back.
That seems to be a vote in favor of, like, wow, that is probably the most toxic person ever. And she probably, I mean, I get a wonder about HP, though, because it was, I think, Meg Whitman, who's the CEO of HP Enterprise. And so I wonder if HP is like, wait a minute, what? You're looking for another job. What's going on here? So maybe HP Enterprise is going to be getting a new CEO, because that just seems weird when you're shopping for a CEO and you want to poach a CPO from somewhere else.
Well, this guy was...
What's the protocol for that?
This guy was a big company, right? I can't remember where he was from.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he's taking the job. So it's fine because he's taking the job. But the other people that didn't take the job that were in the running is like, well, how do you continue your career where you are now? I mean, do you go into like the president's office and it's like, okay, we're going to make some changes because we don't want to lose you? Or is it just like you can work here until you find another job? That's just messed up.
Well, I always find that odd that CEOs tend to get traded like baseball players. You would think that, and often it's two industries that really don't have anything to do with one another. I remember like where the Pepsi CEO was going to go to like a tech firm at some point. And it's like, what?
Well, John Sculley was, I think, was in the soda industry, who is the CEO that replaced Jobs, because they were like, we can replace, you know, Jobs is not CEO material. We need somebody who's a tried and true CEO. That did not work out for Apple.
I don't understand. Like, don't you need to have an inherent understanding of your product to be CEO? It seems to not be the case. I don't know if HP, like, what do crappy PCs and printers have to do with cars? It's software, I guess, but that just doesn't make sense to me.
Also, in a follow-up, we talked about the guy that wrote, or the guy that registered the domain name that shut down WannaCry. He was here in the U.S. at Las Vegas for DEF CON, and then he was arrested, for his alleged involvement in a banking Trojan the year prior. Some of the code in the banking Trojan may or may not have been his code, so he was arrested. And he's trying to work things out here in America. So some well-intentioned person set up a GoFundMe page to help fund his legal defense.
I think it was the lawyer.
I think it was the lawyer. So $170,000-ish, over $150,000 was collected, most of it fraudulent.
Now, this is a serious blow to his case. The charges against him were probably not going to hold up at all. They're probably going to fall apart. Probably they were looking to get a plea from him or something like that, just scare him. But now you have a case that's related to banking and him being part of banking fraud, and you've got this headline that everybody who supported him did it through credit card fraud. So this is pretty damning for him. I think these people did a lot more damage than they helped. Well, yeah. they didn't help at all because they're refunding the money. But I think they've really hurt the case.
Yeah, I think that the prosecutor is going to probably use this and twist this. And it's obvious. Like, if you run in information security circles, it's obvious what happened here. Everybody involved did this for the lulz. And so I'm really excited about the court transcripts that are going to follow, because it's like, is the defense attorney going to have to explain what the lulz is and how the lulz works to, you know, a courtroom that is decidedly not in the know?
Can you red pill 12 angry men?
I don't think that's how that works. So yeah, good job, guys. This guy was probably not like, I'm reading the information that's on the internet. I don't think that he's guilty. He probably wrote the software. But the software was probably co-opted by a criminal. And I think that this case would set a very dangerous precedent if he is found guilty of a crime for having written the software. So I think that we've got to err on the side of not starting down that road, because then no one will publish anything and we are in a worse state from a security standpoint because of it.
But a big win for the FBI.
Yeah.
It's because, hey, they don't want that stuff published.
Yeah, how weird would it be if the CIA was behind all of the hacked credit cards to submit to the thing? Like, that was the whole that was the whole thing. I mean, we're in a world where that's not completely implausible.
You know what's terrible is we're also in a world where if that was proven, nobody would go to jail.
Yeah, literally, it's like, oh, was that wrong? Should we not have done that? It'll be like the Kim.com spying. It's like, oh, we didn't realize that we'd written a bot to submit credit card numbers that were stolen. Sorry, that's just how that works. In other news from China, they've ordered telecom providers to collect and store people's real identities as they post to internet message boards, forums, things like that, so that anybody that posts any political, you know, dissident type speech or anything illegal or whatever can be identified.
This is actually the dream of everybody who, you know, runs. Remember Google Plus tried to do this? It tried to do the real name.
Identity.
Yeah. People didn't go for it. But in China, you don't have the option. So I think world leaders around the world would love to have this. They would love to not be bad-mouthed in a way that they couldn't track down and punish. And so hopefully this doesn't catch on, but I'm sure China will be very successful with it because they're really good at cracking down on that sort of thing.
Well, the U.S. as a country is a relatively new country. I mean, we're not thousands of years old or even just a couple of hundred years old, really. And the concept of state secrets is a relatively new legal construct. I think it occurred in the 20th century, like mid-20th century. So it's pretty recent. And so you think about it, and it's like, well, that kind of makes sense because, you know, the government is an apparatus that is funded by the taxpayers, by the citizenry, and it's supposed to be the will of the people that, you know, helps the country run. And so infrastructure, like things like the federal government does, dams, roads, things like that, or schools, whatever, are for the public good. And so those are, you know, funded with public tax dollars and tax dollars from corporations and things like that. And so you think that, okay, that kind of makes sense that everybody's working under the public good, so there shouldn't be any secrets. I mean, citizens should have a right to that transparency, to know how their government is operating. Maybe citizenry can identify places where there is waste and things like that. And so you would think that information collected by the government in general should be public information as well. And, you know, so state secrets is kind of new. Well, kind of, sort of, but not really, because the police have been collecting license plate data forever in California, but California's Supreme Court has ruled, well, there are privacy implications for that, and it probably should be released because it was collected with public taxpayer dollars, but it's not necessarily public information because privacy.
Now, this is not just they're keeping track of license plate numbers. What they're doing is they're putting cameras on police cars and sometimes just in stationary places, and they're capturing the license plates as they drive by, which gives them a location, a time, a location, and a license plate number. And they're just storing those away. There's not really necessarily an active investigation looking for somebody. It's just, let's just collect this, right? And then when the time comes and you may testify, hey, I was here on a certain day, or I was not here on a certain day. And they go to the database and they're like, oh, really? Because your car was there and we can prove it because we've got these databases. Well, somebody sued and said, you know, you can't keep the secret. We should be able to search this database as well. We should be able to know if you're capturing this data. And the argument is a real, it's the pinnacle of hypocrisy. They said, we can't give you that data because it would violate these people's privacy.
So we've got a state apparatus that's collecting data that, you know, you can't really observe what they're doing. I don't know. I think that there's a problem here if the data, I mean, it seems bad. It seems like a bad precedent. It seems like a bad situation. Maybe we shouldn't be collecting that data in the first place. Maybe the EFF can hop in here and say, well, if you're doing this, then this is not in the public interest. This is not in the public good. There's too much opportunity for this to be abused. I think more importantly, we've seen that, you know, one rogue police officer planting drugs or anything like that can ruin dozens, if not hundreds of cases. How long before we have a rogue police IT administrator that's going to put somebody at the scene of a crime that they don't like?
Or, you know, use this to keep track of an ex-girlfriend or whatever. Now, the point is, 99.99% of these people, if not 100, are not under investigation for anything. They're just driving. And there's no reason to capture and follow them and track them. But they're going to do it. And so if they're going to do it, shouldn't we be able to look at it and keep track of it and, you know, double check them?
You know who else wants to look at things that maybe they shouldn't be able to look at? It's the Chinese government. Well, so there's a Chinese firm that is linked with the intelligence apparatus, and the Chinese government is saying, well, we want our firm to examine the source code to be sure that the source code of these programs from outside entities are not being used to subvert China in some way. We should be able to examine the source code. And that maybe is not entirely unreasonable. The problem comes in that there are probably unknown vulnerabilities in that source code, which could be exploited and maybe squeak under the radar for years or perhaps even decades, as we saw in the SMB V1 vulnerability, almost a decade in the wild and no one caught it, even in open source. So I'm not sure that that's a good idea either.
And the Chinese do have a history of, you know, cyber espionage and cyber attacks. Not that we have clean hands.
The snack machines inside the CIA have even got problems.
when I say we, of course, I do not equate the Chinese citizen any more than I equate with that any more than I equate myself with the CIA. It's horrible people at the top playing their little Game of Thrones. But the scary part is your Microsofts and IBMs of the world are actually looking to agree to this. So all of your office products that you use every day all the vulnerabilities are going to be open to Chinese sources who can then somehow crack it for spying purposes. That we've seen with the NSA inevitably leaks out to the really, really horrible people, and they're going to use it to hurt you in some way.
You know who else is mining that data, or mining public data, I guess, as opposed to private source code data? The IRS. They're wanting to mine all the social network data, link up their taxpayer profiles with public profiles, and look for people who are evading taxes.
Now, this is easier than you might think, and a lot of the software already exists. A lot of schools, especially private schools, they hire these companies to monitor the social media of the students at the school. And if you've got a picture of yourself hitting a bong or something on there, you're in trouble at the school, which is, you know, it's kind of weird. It's pretty Orwellian. But with the IRS, if you file for bankruptcy and they see some pics of you, you know, getting on a private plane or on board your yacht, or you just bought a new boat, then your bankruptcy case is going to be in a little bit of trouble.
Can't people just get off that by just saying that they were playing a character for their social media? It's like, oh, I'm a person. I have to do this.
Well, there's the great story of 50 Cent, and he filed for bankruptcy. Now, you can imagine 50 Cent probably has a lot of money. I guess he made some bad investments, filed for bankruptcy, and constantly in court, the judge was like, Mr. Jackson, your Instagram shows you in a bathtub full of $500 bills. how are you declaring bankruptcy? And he wouldn't stop doing it. He just kept taking pictures with piles of cash. But he claimed that that was, of course, 50 Cent, not the real man.
Wow. Neat. I mean, it could work. It could work. You can deduct very expensive meals from your taxes and use, oh, I'm playing a character as a defense. It's really horrible, 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 horrible. But it can be done.
It's almost like we need tax reform.
Oh, nearly 3,000 Bitcoin miners have exposed online operations via telnet ports. Okay, so this is basically a Chinese mining company accidentally had their Bitcoin miners on the open internet with telnet access with a default password. And someone noticed this and tweeted about it. And whoever, like, he tweeted, like, the internet, I don't know. Then they figured it out and they took it offline. So here's a fun article about it.
That's it was some security researcher, of course, found it. Now, the scary part is if someone else had found it, all they would have to do is go in there and change the address. And they showed in here like the size of this mining pool, and they were all in the same pool. So it was definitely one entity. If you were mining Litecoin, you'd make about $1 million in 24 hours.
Wow. That is a lot of mining capability.
Yeah.
Mm. Are you a Time Warner customer or former Time Warner cable customer, I should say? And did you use the My TWC app? Well, I've got some bad news for you. Your data was stored in an Amazon bucket that was not secured. Another story about Amazon buckets. All those leaky buckets.
I think that's four in a row, right? Yeah. 4 weeks in a row where some pretty serious data. Now, this was not credit card information. I think this was MAC address, email, address, first, last name. But that is enough information to be very damaging for an identity thief. You know, even though they're not going to get directly to your credit card, they might call your credit card company and be like, hey, I'm this person.
Here come the phishing emails that are like, dear Charter customer, did you used to use the My TWC app? Good news, Charter has upgraded. Click here to verify your account.
And it's going to be a 10,000 character URL.
You know what else is leaky or a leaky bucket? Gift cards. So it turns out gift cards have a pretty easy to guess system, at least a lot of gift cards. And it's pretty easy to brute force gift cards by using the check available balance function because most of those are not protected.
There was a security researcher who was hired by what he describes as a Mexican chain restaurant. I don't think it was Taco Bell. I think it was either Qdoba or Chipotle. And he noticed that you could take as many gift cards as you want because you can load them at home. You can use your credit card. So they're like, yeah, sure. Take them all. We don't care. So he took them all. And he looked at the numbers and he noticed that, hey, one of these numbers is sequential. All the rest are always the same, except for the four at the end. So he brute forced it, and sure enough, he was able to check the balance on a lot of active gift cards.
He was also able to reprogram gift cards because it's just a simple magnetic stripe, and so the cards worked in the restaurants after reprogramming the magnetic stripe. The staff were not wise to match up the number on the gift card that was printed on the gift card with the number on the magnetic stripe.
Now, this company actually did use a CAPTCHA on their website, which is one of the things that you would want to do to stop the brute force attack, but it was all JavaScript. So we just turned off the JavaScript and it was like, oh, okay, yeah, you can keep submitting that. So it doesn't take a ton of work to fix these, but they don't do the minimum.
You know who else could use some help with documents submitted through their API? The FCC. So there was this really great upload to the FCC that it looks like an official FCC memo, and this PDF is actually hosted on FCC.gov. How did they do that? They hacked the website? No. They violated the terms of service? Nope. Literally, the FCC API will allow you to attach any document, anything you want, executables, doesn't matter, to your comment, and this guy attached this PDF, which is from the Federal Communications Commission, and it's great because it says, you know, dear American people, we are so sorry that Ajit Pai is such a cuck. Sincerely, the FCC commissioners.
They're not sorry about that. That's the fake part. Now, you have to get an API key from the FCC to do this, but they'll literally give one to anybody, or at least they would before this embarrassing thing happened. Now, the scary, of course, calling them a cuck, that's hilarious. And no one should be mad about that. This guy should be scared because they're probably going to, you know, lash out at him. The scary part here is that you could upload EXEs, compressed files, anything that you want. And that gives you an FCC.gov address to fish with.
Yeah.
So when you fish, one of the things you look at, you mouse over that link and it's like, that's not the right domain. In this case, it is. You can send emails as FCC.gov with a link that goes to FCC.gov, but it's definitely malware.
Yeah, this is probably bad. Now, they fixed it, but they didn't fix the demo server.
So you can still get that FCC.gov. They might have fixed that by now. This is probably after that article. But this is really embarrassing. These people are supposed to be knowledgeable. And we've already seen in the past with the whole like DDoS thing, it wasn't a DDoS. It was just, they don't know what they're doing. And they don't know what they're doing with this either.
I've tried really hard to understand both the business side and the technical side. And the only conclusion that I can come to is that they're literally paid to say these things. And they're not doing this for in the interest of furthering the infrastructure or building something that is for the people, as it were.
And I think they're hiring based on that as well. So when you hire the Verizon shill, he does not know how to write an API. I'm sorry.
Turns out Instagram is also struggling with their API. Apparently there was a problem with their API and celebrity contact information, including their phone numbers, were revealed. Instagram's being pretty tight-lipped about details on this, and they just said, if you're affected, we'll let you know.
Well, if you're affected and a major celebrity, we will let you know. If you're a pleb, yeah, whatever. No one cares about your phone number, loser.
Uber, we got more Uber news. Now, Uber riders can now make their trips more private than previously they could.
Well, by more, you mean at all. So Uber, of course, Uber tracks where you get picked up, where you get dropped off. That makes sense, right? But the weird thing was they tracked you for 5 minutes after you got dropped off.
Hmm.
And they claim that was a safety feature, but it's kind of weird.
That is a bit weird. It's also worth noting that Uber is also under investigation for the Department of Justice for using location data and other data that they collected on people to do what was called gray listing, wherein, you know, if you were a regulator or somebody that was involved in at a city that's like, oh, Uber should not operate here, if you installed the Uber app and you tried to hail an Uber ride, the app would just display fake data to you when you were gray listed, and no one would ever come to pick you up.
Yeah. Now, if you are an Uber user, this is an opt-out deal, so get the latest version, open up your settings, and turn that off.
You know who else is suffering security issues this week? Pacemaker vendors. There's a recall of 465,000 pacemakers, although the vendor really wants to emphasize that this is a voluntary recall. The vulnerabilities are fairly serious in these pacemakers.
Yeah, it's a voluntary recall, but if you don't go for the voluntary recall, someone could run the battery out of your pacemaker by constantly attacking it, or change the settings remotely.
Or just, you know, like, erase it, and then it's back to factory defaults. And that's, I think the more scary thing here is that the vendor said that in normal reprogramming, like in the doctor's office, that will cause 0.003% of the devices to fail entirely.
And a larger percent will do the factory reset, where again, you are back to, it's not your settings. It's not your heartbeat. It's somebody else's. They do have a backup mode, which thankfully you would want a pacemaker to have a backup mode. That's a nice thing to have. So they're going to put you in backup mode, and I think it could happen that they simply have to just put your settings back while you're in backup mode. But still, pretty terrifying.
Yeah.
Your heart could stop.
Why is this happening? How long until my pacemaker has an IP address, and then pretty soon it's mining Bitcoin?
Yes, look, I'm short of breath.
What's this heat coming from? I don't understand.
How many mega hashes do you think a pacemaker can get?
Probably not very many before the battery's dead. Of course, if you had enough of them working, I mean, maybe it would be worthwhile. I don't know. Yeah, we got a fun story from Quebec. So this is a guy that had some credit problems, and he bought a Kia, but then he lost his job. And so his mom took pity on him and paid off his car, and so that he wouldn't have to have the payment or anything. So the car was paid off, but there was a device in the car that would always track its GPS location and allow the dealership to shut it down. So when he paid the car off, the dealership said, that's great, you've paid off your car. You need to bring it in so we can remove the GPS tracker. Oh, and it's also a $200 fee for removing the GPS tracker. The guy that bought the car said, well, there's no language about an extra $200 fee in the contract. Car's paid off, it's mine, not paying it. And so they shut his car down.
Yeah. Now, that device is not a common thing. I mean, it's common, but it's not like, you're not guaranteed to get that in a lease. This is because his credit was pretty much non-existent, or, you know, worse than non-existent. And they were like, okay, we'll sell you the car, but we're putting the GPS thing in it. And I think he did verbally agree to it, but it wasn't in the contract. Now, every judge and every regulator that looked at this agrees with this guy. They're like, no, you did the wrong thing here. This is terrible. You're not allowed to do that. So they were like, okay, we'll take it out. And they didn't charge him any money, but I don't think I would have let him off that easy.
Yeah. It's like, you want your GPS tracker back, it's going to be a few thousand bucks.
Yeah. Or what, you want my GPS tracker, which is in my car. I'll sell it to you.
And also you need to, like, something punitive damages for those 2 days I had to get a taxi to work.
I don't know if, you think Canada has better, like,
consumer protection laws?
Or tort laws where you can't do those kinds of cases as easily?
One would think. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. They haven't ruled out legal action, so this may be a follow-up that we cover in the future.
You might have a couple of more Kias before this is over with.
711 million email addresses have been ensnared in the largest spam bot ever. So the deal with this spam bot is that the spam was coming from inside the house.
Yeah, this is just a big list of SMTP servers, username, passwords. Somebody found it, and it's a giant, giant spam bot. So if you get spam from your friends, they're on the list.
It's great because they were sending spam from actual legitimate mail servers is why it was so effective, using actual legitimate accounts. So hopefully, I wonder if anybody has set up a website with this list where you can go put in your email address and find out if you were on the list.
I wonder if anybody set up a website with that same operation, but then they are stealing your email address to be added to another spam list.
Oh, we talked about the Intel management engine before. This is actually something that I've worked on and off doing an entirely separate video on, which is how to basically corrupt the Intel management engine so that the Intel management engine is kind of neutered but still functional because it's an integral part of the boot process. If you're not read in on what the Intel management engine is, when you first turn your computer on, before the processor actually starts doing stuff, the processor has to be, you know, sort of set up by the system board, the motherboard. Well, that's the Intel management engine. In business computers, the Intel management engine also allows IT staff and your system administrators to do things like remotely control the machine, remotely reinstall the operating system, remotely troubleshoot machines. So it's full access to the system remotely, which is really cool in a business setting, but not really so cool if you've been targeted by the CIA or the FBI or the Chinese government or really pretty much anybody. Well, in researchers doing work on this have figured out a way to disable it, and there literally is just a single bit you can flip which will disable the whole thing but keep it operational enough to boot.
This is similar to the Chinese government's version of Windows 10. It's like, hey, we're the NSA. We understand how terrifying this thing is and what it has access to. You need to give us a way for our computers to turn it off. And so clearly Microsoft is like, well, okay, it's easy to turn off. We'll just, here, just flip this one thing. And so this is leaked out, and you can now do this for yourself. Now, Microsoft says, no, don't do that. That's not been tested. You could destroy your hardware. It's probably going to be fine, though.
So the most amazing thing in this is the high assurance platform. Literally, the variable was called HAP. It's like enable HAP. When you set that to 1, the Intel management engine just boots, but all of the other management stuff is disabled. And this was most likely added for the NSA or as part of their high assurance platform thing, which is something we know about from the Snowden leaks. So this is surprising and interesting and also really disheartening because it's like, oh, we can't just, you know, change the management engine to make you crazy Libre boot, you know, RMS huffing whatever people happy. And it's like, oh yeah, it actually was just the one bit.
Yeah.
Just one.
Well, it's exactly the same as the Chinese version of Windows. It's like, hey, we'll use Windows, but you got to take all this spying crap out of it. And it's like, oh, it doesn't spy. No, you got to take it out. Okay, we'll take it out. And that's the same argument here. It's like, we would never use this for remotely attacking you. It's not a vulnerability. You have to have it. It's part of the boot process. And the NSA is like, no, really, take it out. And they're like, okay, yeah, just this one thing.
This is yet another instance where the Church of Richard M. Stallman followers will point to this and be like, see, we told you. And no one's arguing he's not wrong or he's not right. He's totally right. He's exactly right. And this is yet another, my goodness, I can't believe it was a single bit. It would be nice if this works universally across all platforms, but it's kind of a developing story, so we'll see.
I think they're probably going to patch it.
And so that it doesn't do anything?
The next generation, if you flip this bit, it goes into like hyper-spying mode. And they give the NSA the new bit to flip.
Oh, there's an Android DDoS botnet. Wow. WireX. So a whole bunch of tech firms, including competing tech firms, have banded together to take out this Android botnet because it is so bad. There are so many Android phones that have been compromised in this botnet that we've got, you know, cross-partisan, basically, cooperation to get this thing shut down before anybody notices.
This is, we talked about similar stories last week where popular apps didn't even know they were installing adware and malware and stuff. This is a similar thing. There are like 300 apps that'll get you into this botnet, and you might have no idea that your phone is on a botnet. And you just, you know, when you're not using it, even if the screen is locked, as long as it's on, it can take part in these DDoS attacks or, you know, whatever they want it to be. So they believe that it was previously doing the click farming on YouTube. But I guess YouTube has now cracked down on that. So like, we'll just sell DDoS. Yeah. We're flexible.
Well, there goes the ad. It's no wonder everything's been demonetized. Jeez, yeah. That's terrible. Well, hit apps behaving badly is nothing new in the news. This app, which I've never heard of, Sarahaha.
I don't know how to pronounce it. That sounds right.
Quietly uploads your entire address book. So, yeah, it's like, hey, can I access your contacts? And by access, I mean upload them entirely. Now, for what it's worth, the company involved said, oh, we plan to do a find your friends feature. It wasn't working. The developer forgot to take it out. That's going to be totally removed in the next version. Oh, God, please don't comment on this. Please, please, no. Oh, no. So maybe it's going to be removed in the next version. I don't know. But this is actually a pretty common thing. A lot of popular applications will mine as much data from your phone as possible, whether you want it to or not.
As we've noted before, data is the new commodity, and it's valuable to them. You should try to stop that from happening. One thing that kind of undermines what he said about that was like, no, it's find your friend. The researcher found that it was very dogged in its determination to get your, because if it didn't get them the first time, it would just keep trying and it would update pretty regularly. So they really wanted those contacts.
Well, in China, facial recognition is getting good enough to where you can buy KFC with it, board planes, and apparently catch drug users. Not really sure. So yeah, China, face recognition. You can buy your KFC.
It never fails to amuse me that KFC is such an institution in China. It's the biggest fast food restaurant they've got, which is just hilarious. But yeah, so you can just walk up to the kiosk at KFC and it can see your face. They said that like even if you were with a group of friends and they had one girl test it by wearing a wig, it's still new.
Wow.
Banking, that kind of thing. If you go to Macau, which is like a gambling destination, and it's kind of like Hong Kong, it's a different government, the ATMs there will use facial recognition to try and keep you from moving money out of the country.
Wow.
But the really scary one was the drug user thing. So it's like, how do you use facial recognition to catch a drug user? If you already know who they are, why don't you just go pick them up? Well, it was a beer festival, and everybody that walked into the beer festival got scanned. They went through a database of previous drug users. If you get busted for drugs in China, they can test you at any time for the rest of your life. So they just went and found them at the festival, tested them for drugs. Most of them were positive, locked them right up.
Wow. Scary. Like, Oh, you've got a history. Let's do this. Ugh. Switching gears a little bit. Sharp has announced an 8K television because, yeah, that makes sense. Because 4K is not enough. So an 8K is 4K. So like if you imagine this TV is a quadrant, there's a 4K here, a 4K here, a 4K here, and a 4K there. That is 8K. That's what 8K means.
They admit in this article that it's getting to the ridiculous point. 8K at a certain distance is a pretty small distance. The human eye cannot distinguish those pixels. It's sort of like CD audio. A lot of that bandwidth, only dogs can hear.
I would like a 55 or a 60-inch 8K display. Maybe I can use that for, and then I can get down to one display on my computer finally.
Well, that is the one use case they talk about here, is you have to be sitting that close to get the benefit of the 8K. Now, the big problem with 8K, what are you going to watch? I think there's one channel in Japan. That broadcasts in 8K.
Because Japan.
They're coming out with 8K Blu-rays. I don't know when those are coming out. I don't think they exist yet.
You remember the old The Prisoner TV show? It was like on.
We want information.
Yeah, it's like we want information. It's like, who are you? It's like, I'm number four or whatever. That's what I was thinking of the whole time as I was reading this. Google's Alphabet. So if you don't know, Alphabet is the holding company for Google. Well, they're reorganizing from a legal standpoint. This is really just an article about the formalities, and we only mention it because it's really kind of funny. But the company that they're organizing under is 26.
Of course, in case you don't know, that's the number of letters in the alphabet. The big thing here for Google is they are reorganizing into an LLC. And so like right now, Google has investors, right? But after this, Google will have one investor, Alphabet, and Alphabet will have investors. So it does structurally change some of the, you know, if you're going to make complaints about certain things, like this whole search engine thing, that'll probably change that, how that works in the future a little bit.
It also changes the, like, how insulated all the different companies are. So, like, Biotech and Waymo for vehicle automation, are insulated from the search company. So, if, you know, Waymo automates a bus full of school children and everybody dies, then it's not really going to affect the search giant, and it's not really going to affect, you know, other things because of the limited liability aspect.
This is probably, I mean, this has probably been in the works for a long time. Of course, we know ever since they brought out the whole Alphabet thing, but the calls from some people are getting pretty loud to break up Google. Mm. People are sort of like, you know, we got to take them apart. They're too big. They're too powerful. The big data, that Facebook as well. It's like, you know, there's no people. We can't regulate it because we don't know enough about it. No one understands it, and it's too dangerous. And I'm sure this will help them be like, no, no, your problem is with Google, and all of our other companies are not a part of that.
Seems likely. You know who else has problems with organizing? Tesla. Tesla apparently is hostile, if the author of this article is to be believed. Tesla is a bit hostile when it comes to workers organizing into unions. And the United Auto Workers of America is like, hey, what's going on here, Tesla? What are you doing?
Now, the unionization in an ideal world, probably not a terrible thing, right? I mean, these companies can be... He's known for working people really hard and be like, no, we will realize my vision or you will die trying.
Do you have any idea how hard people work in other countries?
Yeah, yeah.
You got it real easy. Let's work real hard. And it's like, well, it's not untrue.
But the United Auto Workers has a long and bloody history of bad behavior, and they probably are more concerned with their own survival than the workers themselves. That's my personal opinion. And so in Tesla's defense, he's like, these people were all these people who were making like safety complaints and stuff like that were planted by the UAW. They were sent here to stir up. And so they're saying, you know, you're not letting us hand out pamphlets. You're not letting us organize and stuff like that. And they probably were plants. I don't know. California probably has some pretty draconian laws in terms of that stuff. So probably a losing battle for Musk, I think.
You know, one of the other key components, if self-driving cars are going to become ubiquitous, is that the self-driving cars can communicate with one another, and how they do that exactly has been kind of elusive. Qualcomm has recently announced that they've got a new chipset, the 9150C-V2X, which is a chipset that covers both car-to-car direct communication as well as cellular communication.
Now, this is, what year? There's a certain year when all cars have to have this.
I thought it was like 2020.
It's soon. And this is going to be, it's not like a top-down tracking kind of thing. It's peer-to-peer. So every car is communicating with all the cars around it. It's like, I'm going here. I plan to stop here. I plan to take this turn. That kind of thing. It's totally in preparation for self-driving cars. Because, of course, self-driving cars, when they know what the other cars are planning to do, can be very efficient. The problem here is it's going to go into non-self-driving cars, and it's going to be reporting everything that you do, how fast you're going, how quickly you stop. I probably, you know, like things in the cabin, you know, it's going to know how many people are in the car, stuff like that. There are, if you don't know, there are weight sensors in your car for the airbags.
HOV lane or not.
Yeah. So if somebody's in the passenger seat, it's going to know. And there's going to be some interesting cases that are going to come up, and it's like, you know, we know that when you caused this traffic accident that killed three people, that you were speeding, and that's manslaughter. How do we know? Because 20 other cars around you tattled on you and said that.
Here's a video feed from the eye tracker in the dashboard. Yeah. Your eyes were not on the road. It's like...
So if you buy a new car, just that's coming. It's probably already there in a lot of them.
Well, let's talk for a second about operating system usage shares or operating system usage statistics.
Yeah, the desktop... The big one is that fourth column. That's, you can't see the header because we couldn't fit it all on the screen. That's Linux at 3.37%.
It's grown considerably since as far back as this graph goes, which is September 2015, of 1.74%. Interestingly, though, Windows really hasn't suffered that much. It's actually improved. It's 90.54% to 90.70%. So it seems like Mac's desktop share is suffering, which... I know many people that would not believe that if you told them.
Well, they also wouldn't believe if you told them that their hardware was garbage. Because they are sadly lost to us.
It's only like 2 or 3 years behind the curve. That's cool, right? I mean, it's not like Intel's innovated in the last 2 or 3 years. So, I mean, I guess that's maybe a thing. We're still on Skylake, technically.
But it's heartening. You know, hey, more Linux users, less Apple users. That's the perfect world, isn't it?
Facebook has been hiring a lot of satellite engineers and things lately, and it turns out that they've mapped the population in 23 countries within 5 meters of where they are, like using satellite imagery. Like, Facebook knows every structure that's in those countries, and I don't know. This seems weird.
What's
Zuck up to?
They've also crossed that over with census data, so not only do they know where those structures are, they have a pretty good idea of how many people are living there. So the public idea that they're saying is they want to give all these people internet, and it's going to be Facebook-branded internet, and Facebook mines data as their primary way of making money. So they're going to be watching what those people do on the internet. Kind of scary, maybe?
You know who else watches what people do on the internet? Google. We talk about it a lot, and this is a story that everyone should go and read, really, because we can't do it justice to just cover it in a minute or two. It was fascinating. You know, I expected to read through this article really quickly, and I found myself going back to be like, wow, is this really a thing? And sort of checking the sources and that kind of thing. There's some really interesting stuff in this article. I think the most interesting thing is that a story from, I think, like 2011, when Google Plus was first rolling out the Plus One button, it was apparently a meeting with Forbes and Forbes executives, and it was like, hey, you need to get the Plus One button on your Forbes articles, or your search engine ranking's gonna, you know, suffer a little bit for that. It's totally, and it's like, well, you know, that's not how Google sees it, but that's totally what they were talking about.
Well, they did admit it. I mean, so what happened was this journalist was in the meeting because she worked at Forbes at the time. I think it was a she, right?
I think so.
And so she was in the meeting and she was like, hey, well, I have a question. Did you just say that if we don't put this button on here, it's going to hurt our search rankings? And they were like, yes, you must put the button on there. So she was like,
they said, I wouldn't phrase it that way, but essentially, yes.
So that's an interesting story, right? So she's a journalist. She wrote a story about it for Forbes and published it. And the immediate response was, this story goes away forever. Don't ever write anything about this again. But amazingly, it disappeared from Google. Like, that you could not search. This was a Forbes article. So you think, yeah, that's a pretty big, you know, I mean, people are going to copy it. People are going to cite it and stuff like that. No. All mention of it disappeared. And this, she wrote this article, calling back to that, in response to another guy recently who's like, hey, I printed something Google didn't like and scary stuff happened.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. I don't know. I like the whole email chain too. That the she had a recent conversation with the guy that's in charge of stuff like this, these types of incidents at Google PR, and was like, well, you know, there's been a lot of changes since then. I hope that we can earn your trust or re-earn your trust or whatever in the intervening time. But I honestly don't know what to make of this. I mean, if the only devil's advocate argument that I can come up with here is like, if Google Plus would somehow genuinely improve the semantics of the page. So what if it was, we really want news sites to supply a meaningful description of the content of the article in less than 250 characters in the meta description tag on the website. And articles that don't do that will be punished. That seems like that would not be a bad idea. That seems like that would be a good thing. But it seems like there's a really, really deep chasm between that and the Google Plus button.
Yeah, you're making way too far of a leap there. This was a desperate attempt to...
It was the best I could come up with. I don't know.
It was a desperate attempt to keep a terrible idea of a social network alive and get it started. And you're never going to beat Facebook. It's not going to happen. No, it will happen. We're Google. We can do anything. But even with their power to do things like this, they couldn't make that happen.
I love our next story because it paints the naysayers of our comments into a difficult corner, and I'm really anxious to see how they try to get out of the corner. And that is, Comcast is suing Vermont to avoid building 550 miles of new cable lines. And so on the surface, I feel like that those people would say, well, Comcast shouldn't have to be told to build cable lines to subscribers if those subscribers are not profitable, to which I would retort, well, current regulations give Comcast the franchise rights, meaning that no other company can move in these areas. So does that mean that we should let somebody else move in because they're not, you know, they're not wanting to supply those customers with any kind of service? What's the resolution here?
Well, the 550 is an important number because the contract that this place, this municipality came to with Comcast was you will build no fewer than 550 miles of infrastructure.
Yeah.
And so, literally, that's like, here's one of the things. We're going to give you this business. You're going to be the number one ISP. Here's what you have to do. And they're like, okay, we'll do that.
You can be the incumbent provider. And so it's like, okay, this is cool. We're going to let other people in to take over this. Or it maybe the city should open it up to bids. Like, should there, or the state or whatever, you know, is there another cable provider that would like to have access to our customers? Will you agree to 550 miles of infrastructure? Because maybe that's the balance that I can strike with our viewers who are like, less government regulation is good.
Well, you act like that you're going to change these people's minds.
Yeah.
But let me tell you that no argument you make is going to be better than that check they get every month from Comcast. I'm sorry.
What sort of mental gymnastics am I going to have to do to justify this check that I'm receiving? Yeah. Yeah, I deal with that. That's just, I've seen it. I've witnessed it. I've touched that firsthand. And there is no convincing somebody, you know, once they're on that teat, there's just no way that.
Listen, Comcast. If that number's big enough, I'm on your team. I'll get on here every week. I'll preach the gospel.
It's got to be a lot of zeros in that.
A lot of zeros, yeah.
Samsung has gotten a self-driving car permit in California. And we only mention this because the fallout from this is there's a lot of companies freaking out about this.
Yeah. Just like the, you know, in-home, what do you call those things?
Personal assistants.
Personal assistants. Yeah, the speaker, the Alexas. It's going to be like Kleenex, you know. It's going to like, hey, let's go get an Alexa, meaning any one of the brands, but Amazon did it first. And so Samsung is getting in the self-driving car, just like, you know, with all these other little. And Samsung in America, in the US, Samsung is a powerful brand, but in Korea, I mean, they basically own Korea. And that's a big market where they can, you know, build these new products and they have a guaranteed user base and all that stuff. And so they can quickly and powerfully build up these products and compete cheaply.
So I have a question for you. If Amazon sold a defective product, would Amazon be liable for injuries received from using that defective product? Well, we may soon find out because apparently Amazon sold counterfeit solar eclipse glasses that cause permanent blindness.
Now, of course, Amazon, to saying that Amazon sold them, Amazon hosted a third-party seller which sold them. Now, I'm not saying that takes it out of, I'm not saying they're not responsible.
Not saying this is not an ambulance chaser.
Right. Well, no, I'm going the other way. Like, I'm not letting Amazon off the hook. It's like, okay, it was on your website, you sold it, you have responsibility for it. Now, they did recall these, but the people who are suing are saying, hey, what day was the eclipse?
I think it was like the 21st.
They recalled them on the 19th, I think.
Ew, that might not be enough time for people to check their email.
That's like the guys at DEF CON who got the emails like, don't go on stage 10 minutes before they went on stage.
And then they were fired.
Yeah, so that is a very short window of time to be like, oh, I'm not going to use these glasses. So people are saying that they're having like blind spots and they're, you know, the big yellow spots, they're not going away. They basically stared at the sun with regular sunglasses. That's what they did. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how much the courts feel that Amazon is responsible for that.
Oh, switching back to technology news, SanDisk has released a 400 gigabyte micro SD card. It is mind-blowing that they got 400 gigabytes into this thing, but there's got to be a drawback, right? Yes, the drawback is the relatively slow write speeds.
Yeah, they rate this at app speed, and if you dig down to what app speed is, it's like...
Not video.
We had to create a new kind of speed limit to call it, you know? It's like the worst kind of... It'll do 1080... It will not do 4K.
Yeah.
Read or write, no 4K from this card.
No, not
but happening. 400 gigabytes is incredible. The last record, also SanDisk, 200 gigabytes. So they doubled it.
Well, 400, to put this in perspective, 400 gigabytes means that if you got a shoebox and filled it with these micro SD cards, you would have a petabyte in the shoebox. That is a completely nuts. Just, I don't even. A petabyte in a shoebox is completely crazy.
A very slow petabyte.
Yeah, now I need to get on building some sort of massive RAID array to parallelize all the reads and writes between the hundreds of 400 gigabyte SanDisk Ultra micro SD cards. And then it's like, oh yeah, here's my portable petabyte storage array. Somebody will buy that. Somebody will probably buy up all the capacity for that. It's kind of nuts.
They weren't. Usually when you get that kind of big boost in storage, it's outrageously expensive. I can't remember what the price was, but
$250.
Not crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, price per gigabyte, it's not too bad.
Yeah, that is kind of nuts. I wonder if they're using old processes or, I don't know. It's kind of weird. It's usually the new process stuff is more expensive than that for sure. So.
Oh, yeah, they talk about they look at more bits per whatever. So it's a whole new way of storage.
Terrestrial radio. Yeah, there's like you send out like radio, literally where we're talking about radio waves, not internet radio, which is an entirely different thing. Those things that have antennas that broadcast and, you know, in the megahertz range typically, and you pick up stuff. Yeah, those are going away probably. I mean, in a story that was news to no one, traditional radio faces a grim future.
I think it's news to some of the radio executives. Now, they talk about on here what's killing it is, of course, Spotify and Pandora, and everybody's got Bluetooth in their car with their phone and that type of thing. Personally, I think they're missing the point here. What's killing it is 30 to 40 minutes of every hour's commercials. If I get in a car and somebody's got the radio on, I want to just dive out the window. Those commercials are bad, and they're in your face, and no one's going to sit and listen to that unless they have to.
No, it's really terrible. Terrestrial radio, the content of terrestrial radio has been terrible for a long time, yeah. And that is, you know, the problem. Well, this is kind of surprising. Cummins has unveiled an electric semi-truck. This is one of the big, you know, diesel and natural gas trucking companies that make, you know, trucks, long-haul trucks. Well, they've got an electric version. The range isn't great, 100 to 300 miles on the most upgraded version. But, you know, maybe for inner-city delivery or delivery from docks to warehouses, it would be okay.
Did they have a 3? I thought it was straight up 100.
It was 100, but you could get an upgrade to triple the capacity, it said.
Yeah, I don't think 100 miles is really going to compete. Teslas are at least 300, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Out of the box, and then they're looking to improve that. So, yeah.
This would be more like short haul.
And I guess electric for short haul is okay, but I wonder what percentage of the trucking industry is just deals with short haul, though.
Perhaps someone in the day cab industry could tell us what sorts of scenarios this would be useful in. Is it useful for the, you know, pier and dock to warehouse type delivery scenarios? Is it useful because the truck costs dramatically less than a diesel version of the same? I thought it was also funny that you could get a version of this with a gas generator on the back, so you could get, you know, a generator that was powered by good old standard fossil fuels that would charge up your batteries. I somehow don't think that would be as efficient as the diesel models.
Yeah, but. Or is that really an overall savings to the environment?
Oh, yeah.
Because now you've got all the things that go into the battery that eventually have to be thrown away or recycled and that came out of the earth and we don't have any more of them. Plus, you've added gasoline to that.
So, woo! Yeah. Oh, it's like the 70s all over again. Gas-guzzling land boats. I don't know. Kaspersky. Kaspersky's back in the news, this time for turning the tables on a patent troll, as opposed to their problems with the State Department. But this is really interesting because a patent troll was saying, hey, we own this patent, and the patent is on non-user configurable firewalls. And they've mostly been trolling other companies, apparently. And Kaspersky said, that's great. Give us $5,000 and we'll drop the suit. Which it's like, wait a minute. Wait, what?
Now, this sounds crazy, right? So these people bought a patent for a non-configurable firewall, and they just, you know, shotgun approach, sue everybody. Hey, everybody that sells a firewall. And a lot of times, they don't want much money. I think they originally asked for $60,000. They quickly came down to $10,000 as they stood their ground. So in a lot of cases, what happens is these people look at it, and they're like, okay, the legal team is going to cost $100,000. They want $60,000. Just give it to them and make them go away. But Kaspersky was like, you know what? Let's fight this. And in the end, it's funny because the number just kept coming down. And finally, Kaspersky was like, give us five. and we'll let you go away. And they're like, okay, here's five.
Nice. PayPal has debuted a credit card that offers 2% cash back. Neat.
I have a cash back credit card, and that's just the greatest thing ever because they just give you money. That's the best way. That's why I think that I really like the idea of that Whopper coin.
They're going to sell your data anyway.
Yeah, that's a great like customer, what do they call it? Customer reward type thing where it's just like, hey, just have some money back. We'll just give you some money. That's the way to do it, credit card companies.
I think our generation says that, you know, maybe like Batman and Robin, Starsky and Hutch, but what about Alexa and Cortana?
Something tells me that there's going to be some deviant art, fan art of Alexa and Cortana.
I wasn't even thinking about that, but now it's just, Cortana already has a personification from the Halo series. I don't know about Alexa, but that's just not going
to
end well.
She's about to get one. So what's going on here is you will soon be able to ask Alexa to access Cortana and vice versa and use, they sort of came together and it's like, hey, we recognize that one is better for e-commerce and the other is better for whatever Microsoft's thing is good for, and let's let them work together.
It just seems like a bad, like you just, you know, it's like you're fighting with somebody and it's like, hey, Cortana, tell Alexa that I need to order some stuff because I'm not going to talk to Alexa directly because we had a disagreement about that 10 pounds of gummy bears that we ordered a while ago.
Tell that bitch to order me something from Amazon.
In tough times, restaurants are turning to data mining. This story was great because it's talking about technologies that are 10 or 15 years old in terms of customer relationship management and things like that. But now your local Taco Bell has access to those types of technologies and can data mine you and manipulate you into buying more chalupas.
If you pay with a credit card or you set up a reservation, you are being data mined at the restaurants you go to. And they're keeping track of you in terms of how often you visit, how you tip, what you order, things like that. And they're using it to customize your experience, try to get you to come back more. And of course they are selling it. You know, that this is the big Facebook thing. It's like, oh, they're capturing all this data to make a better experience for me. Well, maybe, but they're also selling it.
If they determine that you are willing to pay twice the market price for a chocolate shake, you better believe they're going to be charging you twice the market price for a chocolate shake.
And a lot of companies are getting on board to set up these systems, like the reward systems, you know, the point of sale system, stuff like that. They're all sort of getting homogenized to be able to be farmed for data.
This is sort of interesting. It's a game that you can control with your mind. So it's a VR headset of sorts coupled with a thing that'll read your brainwaves. They had a really good picture of it here, the guy in the headgear. Thought it was here somewhere.
I think it's the very top.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there we go. Yeah, headgear. Nice. Look at that.
So this is pretty cool. You remember the old days when you fired up a game with a joystick and you had to move the joystick to all of its extremes so it could map the joystick? Well, this game actually sort of sets you in a little room and it's like, hey, follow the bouncing light with your eyes. And the bouncing light moves around the room and it'll rest on an object. And it's actually figuring out how your brain reacts to, hey, there's an object that I recognize as an object. And then it uses that to let you interact with objects in the game.
Neat. You know where East Africa is leading the world in drone delivery technology. So this is mainly because of the relatively low population density. Drones are the easiest way to get stuff around.
And it is really weird. It's like, hey, what country has the most libertarian drone laws in the world? Where's the drone leader? You don't think of Rwanda. But sure enough, medical supplies. They need to deliver medical supplies, and it's rough travel, you know, to get from A to B. So they're using drones.
Do you think low insurance payouts for drone injuries have anything to do with it?
Well, but also, like, what? There's just so few people. The drone can come down in, like, 99.9% of the path and hurt no one.
Oh, robots. Robots are definitely coming for our jobs. A new t-shirt sewing robot can make as many shirts per hour as 17 factory workers. Now, sewing actually is really hard to do on a robotic scale because fabric bends and stretches and things like that. This incorporates a computer vision system, and the company that's doing this has been doing this for a while. They started out making bath mats, And now the software is good enough they can actually make t-shirts, and they call their software Softwear, as in W-E-A-R. So, yay. Yeah.
And, of course, the robot. If we had used our naming convention, it would be called Shirty, but Sobot is pretty good. Pretty good name.
Lowry.
Well, it's the, I think the Sobot is the, it's in the picture up there. It's the overall thing.
Yeah, this is Sobot, but that something is called Lowry here. L-O-W-R-Y, I don't know.
So, these guys, there's a rule. If you sell things to the U.S. military, they must be made in this country. Now, they compared, if you were to sew these t-shirts by hand, here in the United States, it would cost $7.
About $7, yeah.
If you did cheap overseas labor, it would cost about 22 cents.
Yep.
We're talking per shirt.
Yep.
The robot, 33 cents.
33 cents.
So it's it works a lot faster.
So guess what's opening up in Mobile, Alabama?
Yeah. And guess who's going to be on the unemployment line? People making t-shirts in the United States.
Speaking of which, store.level1text.com, always American handmade t-shirts, store.level1,
well, always,
never robots.
Always. For the time being.
Europe has unveiled the world's most powerful X-ray laser. So apparently, the thing that stood out to me in this article was all the energy of the sun's rays hitting Earth in a day in something the size of your thumbnail.
They're using it to sort of get motion pictures for things that happen really quickly and we can't observe, like photosynthesis and production of antibodies, things like that. So soon we might actually be able to watch a movie of this is what's going on inside of something that is performing photosynthesis, which is incredible.
Now, something that I want to watch with this machine is how on Earth this actually happens in our next stories. So spiders are weaving webs strong enough to hold humans thanks to scientists. So now this sounds really amazing. What they're actually doing is feeding spiders water that has been contaminated with carbon nanotubes, and the carbon nanotubes get incorporated in the web material. We need to use the X-ray thing to figure out what's going on there, because if this was happening in humans, I'm pretty sure it would just result in lymphoma.
This sounds like the synopsis for those movies that used to come on at 4 a.m. on the Sci-Fi Channel, when it was the Sci-Fi Channel and not SYFY. I mean, it's like there's so many scary things that could go on in your mind. It's like, you know what? Let's feed the spiders superpower fuel and make their webs something that they can trap humans in.
Carbon nanotube?
Should be fine, right? I can't see any negative outcomes.
Carbon nanotube spider webs?
Where we should test this? We should test it in Australia.
Wow, we can make the trapdoor spiders extra, extra, extra deadly.
But, so the idea is, put these bad boys in captivity and feed them nothing but nanotubes and just
milk. That's how you get Spider-Man.
After 4 years of nothing but nanotubes. And we're going to keep their web and build things out of it. It is incredibly, incredibly strong stuff for the weight.
So it's going to be really interesting to see how that shakes out. Maybe we'll just get nanotube shirts. I don't know. I don't know how this is going to...
Do you think they'll be sewn by a robot? Robot-sewn spider shirts. That's this week's title.
Robot spiders. They should have done that for the Terminator movies. I mean, it doesn't need to be human. It could just be giant robot spiders in the end. That's pretty scary. I don't know. You've wasted another perfectly good hour with Level 1 News. I'm Wendell.
I'm Ryan.
We'll see you next week.